I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. Holy Redeemer Hospital and Abington Memorial Hospital in suburban Philadelphia are in discussion about forming a partnership to create a regional healthcare system. Abington is known for its obstetrics and gynecology training program. It also provides comprehensive health and reproductive services for women, including fertility treatments, family planning, tubal ligations, and abortions. Holy Redeemer follows Catholic doctrine and directives, which prohibits these services. So can two hospitals with different missions, different cultures, and different philosophies work together as successful partners? It's our topic for today's Radio Times. And we begin with John Kelly. He's Chief of Staff and Chief Patient Safety Officer at Abington Memorial Hospital. He's also chair of the Women's Health Study Group, dealing with the issue of access for termination of a pregnancy. The group is comprised of representatives of religious organizations, physicians, trustees, the Women's Board, and the administration. And Jack Kelly, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. So what does Abington, or what would Abington get from a partnership or a merger with Holy Redeemer?
I think that when one looks across the healthcare landscape in the United States today, the financial pressures on healthcare to achieve efficiencies, avoid duplication, to provide rationalization of services are all very strong potentials in our community. Holy Redeemer Hospital is a short distance, 1.8 miles from Abington, and we do, if you will, compete and duplicate on a number of levels. At core, we are both responsible for the health of our community, and looking at the complementary services that are available at each institution, we believe that there was a potential on many levels for, in fact, making our social responsibility of trying to contain healthcare costs achievable.
How, though, does a hospital like Abington Memorial Hospital, though, reconcile some of these differences with Holy Redeemer, which has a different approach to specific services, whether we're talking about contraception or fertility or end-of-life care or even abortions?
Very important questions. The early examinations of the possibility for affiliation suggested, as I said before, that there were very real and palpable benefits possible. We did not in any way shy away from the challenges that are inherent in a secular organization joining with a faith-based organization, but needed to get to the point where we could have a frank dialogue about what could and couldn't be done as a joint organization.
Well, picking up on that, if I went to this merger or this partnership and I wanted to get contraception, assuming everything goes through, would I be able to get contraceptive services?
We have had discussions with a number of ethicists, including one of your guests later on the show, John Haas, who's been a consultant to the Archdiocese. And we have achieved an understanding that our physicians would at Abington and in the Abington Health Network would continue to be able to provide the full range of contraceptive services.
How about things like tubal ligations or sterilizations or infertility in vitro, for instance?
We would be able to continue to provide all of those services on our campus.
And emergency contraception?
Yes.
How about abortion?
This is an area where we are still in a lot of discussion. When we've looked around the country at different models, and there have been many mergers of secular and faith-based organizations, including Catholic hospitals with secular hospitals, we are struggling to find models that make sense and that have worked for the long term. Yet we are committed to examining through the Women's Study Group the possibilities. What we will in no way at any time is to compromise the health, safety, well-being of our patients, our mothers, nor our providers, our physicians, our mid-level practitioners. They are all part of the equation and the dialogue. We are committed to continuing the excellence that is obstetrics and gynecology at Abington. And I might add that includes our commitment to the training of the absolute best residents in obstetrics and gynecology.
But is the goal to try to figure out, and I know you don't do a lot of abortions, but abortions are performed at Abington, is the goal to try to figure out how to continue to provide those services for women who need them?
We are committed to providing services to the women in our community who need such services. We're looking for ways that are not the traditional ways that we've provided them. And, again, that's the purpose of the study group, but that is a commitment that we will stand by and not move away from.
Would that mean a hospital within a hospital or a unit that was, you know, set aside for these procedures?
The notion of a hospital in a hospital or a freestanding site on the campus are certainly among the considerations, but again, looking across the country, those models have not held up. I think there is and you can address this, I suspect, with Dr. Haas, there is some certain diocesan to diocesan variation in the level of acceptability of different proposals, and we certainly are in the Philadelphia Archdiocese and need to consult with that diocese and our bishop as to what our local bishop as to what is acceptable, and that's the process we're currently working through. But again, the emphasis that I want to make is the level of commitment to our patients, first and foremost. That's why our doors are open in the morning, and the availability of everything necessary to serve their needs and to support our physicians in the ability to deliver the professional care that they have been trained to do.
But are you saying that if this goes through, that Abington would, in a sense, answer to the Archdiocese of Philadelphia?
The answer to that is no. We would not answer to the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We would have certain reserve powers that are built into any final agreement, and there is no final agreement at the moment. Right. Indeed, there's no letter of intent that has yet been signed. That's still a negotiation. And the reserve powers would prevent us from having to accept further mandates on ethical standards beyond those that are reached in the initial agreement. The slippery slope is, of course, a concern, and we have heard a very strong response from a segment of our community that they do not want us to move away from or erode our secular nature, and we need to be sensitive to that too. And I think that's another large message that we are hearing and are listening to.
Would it, assuming again this partnership, this merger goes through, would that in any way change the training of, let's say, obstetricians, gynecologists at Abington?
Our hope and plan is to preserve the integrity of that training program. It is what we see as a medical staff and hospital, an invaluable asset, and we would not undermine that in any way.
But are we talking about a kind of separate but equal partnership?
Well, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I think that what we would like to see is the ability to maintain all those things that we provide at Abington now for our patients, but in a format that is acceptable and in conformity with the interpretation of the ethical and religious directives, if that is possible.
And do you think it is possible?
I think it's very early in the deliberations, but I can tell you that there's a great deal of intense discussion and examination of the issues so that we can reach an early resolution for our community, because I think that, as you might imagine, this is causing a great deal of anxiety and a wish to make a decision and move forward in a positive manner is foremost on our mind.
Well, John Kelly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Marty, for having us.
You're welcome. He's Chief of Staff, Chief Patient Safety Officer at Abington Memorial Hospital. Joining us now is Lisa Gambusario. She's in her fourth year and as an obstetrics and gynecology resident at Abington Memorial Hospital. In fact, she's chief resident there. And Lisa, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Mari. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. What's your response, reaction to this proposed merger/partnership?
Well, I'm very proud of our OBGYN department and the faculty as well as the residents. I think there initially was outrage and anger towards the proposal. Even though it is not signed, it does restrict practices here. And the line that was given is that it's going to restrict direct abortions. I think the focus in the media has been towards abortions and elective abortions, but that's not all the care that we provide in our four walls. There's things that will get restricted under that one line, including second trimester inductions of labor, as well as advanced abortions for fetal anomalies, as well as maternal medical issues that need to get addressed. So those are standard of care teachings that we learn as residents. If we go to our governing body and look on how to deal with somebody who has ruptured membranes at 17 weeks, 18 weeks, it says that we should be able to offer them an induction of labor or, if possible, perform an advanced D&E. And we are one of the institutions in Philadelphia County and Montgomery County that actually provide those services for our patients.
Is there anything that, John Kelly said that in any way allays some of your concerns?
Not necessarily regarding what he's saying. I don't think that this is going to be something that our faculty or residents are going to be happy with a compromise. I know that they have a board that's working on alternatives so we can get this training and provide those services out of campus at a separate freestanding place. I believe they're looking to Planned Parenthood and places like that. And I think the problem is that is going through our society is that these are being farmed out to freestanding clinics, and those are places where somebody walks in with an open scarlet A on them saying, I'm going in there for an abortion, and it puts patients at risk. It puts the physicians at risk, as we've seen in the past with shootings at these freestanding clinics. These services should be protected, and they should be found inside hospitals where people can't be identified for getting them. That's a violation of HIPAA that we even have freestanding clinics that identify people and what procedures they're getting done there.
Lisa, we're almost up in a break here, and I do want to keep you on shortly after the break as well, but I know you are speaking out against this proposed partnership or merger, and I know you're speaking for yourself, but I'm curious about how others at your colleagues at Abington are feeling.
Yeah, and we've had multiple meetings, and Jack Kelly actually has been at the forefront and has been a very, you know, understanding ear. And I think, you know, he wants to be on our side, and the staff, including medical faculty, people who are doctors who are not in our field, whose practice might not get affected by this merger, people all across are standing up. We had a staff meeting with 200 attendings from all across all specialties. Everybody unanimously showed opposition against this merger. And I don't think there's any willingness for people to compromise in it either. No one here chose to work in a Catholic-affiliated hospital, and that being put on us is not something that people are going to be happy with or willingly agree to.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Lisa Gambusario. She is chief resident at Abington Memorial Hospital in her fourth year of an obstetrics and gynecology residency, talking about the proposed merger between Abington and Holy Redeemer. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
This is Jeff Bundy, WHYY's Director of Member Relations. On August 3rd, WHYY-TV and PBS stations across the country will be premiering a new documentary produced locally by WHYY. The Barnes Collection tells the story of Dr. Albert C. Barnes and his impressive art collection. Support WHYY's local productions with a $120 donation and we'll thank you by sending you two tickets to visit the Barnes Foundation's new home on the Ben Franklin Parkway. Call 1-888-345-9499 or visit WHYY.org.
President Obama and Mitt Romney might want to look over their shoulders. Dr. Jill Stein is running for president on the Green Party banner, and she's pulling no punches.
We need real public servants who listen to the people, not to the corporate lobbyists that funnel campaign checks into the big war chest.
We'll talk with the Green candidate for the White House next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Abington Memorial Hospital and Holy Redeemer Hospital have been in conversation about creating a regional healthcare system. The idea, though, of a religiously affiliated facility teaming up with a secular facility has raised a whole host of questions about healthcare services, including contraception and abortion, fertility, end-of-life decisions. And we're curious about where you stand on this issue. Do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Lisa Gambiserio staying with us for the next couple of minutes, and we'll be joined by Lois Utley, Director of MergerWatch. Lisa, I'm curious about, do you and other physicians who are, and other, I guess, residents at Abington, do you have a relationship with other physicians at, for instance, Holy Redeemer?
We don't. We get referrals from them currently. So since, you know, I started here 3 years ago, we've gotten patients that they can't take care of in terms of their situation, like I was talking about, because they don't perform those procedures or provide those treatments for women. So we will get referrals from them, and they'll send them over here as transfers. But other than that, we don't have, you know, working relationships with those doctors.
And what kind of referrals are we talking about?
Patients that are in cases where they might be infected with early second trimester breakage of their membranes. That risk for infection, they might already be infected. They don't perform or allow an induction of labor for maternal indications or perform advanced dilation evacuations for patients who do find out at 19 weeks that their baby has anencephaly and might not make it past birth or might not make it past the first couple days of life. Those patients that they can't provide care for are referred to our hospital, and those are the services that exactly they're talking about taking away from us.
Would you have applied to Abington if it had merged with Holy Redeemer?
No, and I think there's a good majority of, you know, females now going into OBGYN, and, you know, a lot of them you talk to, they're not going to apply to a religiously affiliated hospital for care of women. That is one huge restriction on the treatment and the service we can provide to our patients.
Now, talking with John Kelly, he talked about contraceptive services still available, fertility treatments still available. Based on what you know, is the real focus of concern then abortion services?
Currently it is, but I think everybody's scare is that an affiliation with a Catholic hospital is a slippery slope. There are canonical lawyers that are going to be, you know, on the board that are going to restrict our access, I believe, in the future. I don't imagine that if they're going to make one red line across direct abortions, if their law says that you can't also do tubal ligations or contraception, which is not done at Holy Redeemer, why eventually that's not going to trickle down to Abington.
Are there any risks for you speaking out on this issue?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think everybody has a voice, and this is just freedom of speech. So we have been speaking out, and we've actually been given great forums at our hospital to speak out against this, that Jack Kelly has actually had, and we hope that our voice as a whole, as a department, and as staff of the entire hospital is going to overcome what has been going on, because the community is crying out, and the staff, the people who give care to the community, is crying out.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's Lisa Gambiserio, and she is chief resident at Abington Memorial Hospital. And we have a full bank of calls here, but let me introduce our third guest. Lois Utley is director of the Merger Watch Project, works to protect patients' rights and access to care when community hospitals are merging with religiously sponsored hospitals. And Lois Utley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yes, good morning, Marty.
Good morning. What we're seeing in suburban Philadelphia, is this happening in other parts of the country?
This is happening all across the nation. Hospitals are merging with each other or forming partnerships like the joint venture proposed here for financial reasons. Just like families, hospitals are in some financial stress now. They are looking to cut costs. They're looking to have a stronger negotiating position with insurance companies and so on. So, yes, it's very common. We're looking at and working with people on about 10 cases across the nation at this point.
And is it possible to reconcile two different philosophies, a religiously-based hospital, a secular-based hospital, when it comes to things like end-of-life decisions or maternal health care?
Well, a hospital merger or partnership is very like a marriage. Each partner needs to take a look at the other one and decide, is this really the right person, or in this case, the right hospital for me? With people, this stage is called dating. With hospitals, it's called due diligence, really examining each other's finances, ways of doing business, and culture. So when it comes to putting together a Catholic and a non-Catholic hospital, there are these serious issues about ethical policies and the culture of the hospital. In this case, Holy Redeemer's laid down some very significant conditions. Abington Hospital has to decide if accepting these conditions is worth the benefit that the hospital sees to get out of it, or is this too high a price to pay? We have seen in the almost 100 cases we've worked on across the nation that sometimes hospitals are able to come up with agreements and compromises. Other times they're just not, and so they call off the wedding.
Well, and I wonder, we focus a lot on abortion, but is that one of the services that becomes a sticking point with these either mergers or partnerships?
Yeah, abortion is always a sticking point because a Catholic hospital will lay down a non-negotiable position during the dating phase that the other hospital may not continue to do abortions. In some communities, it's not as serious a problem as it is with Abington Hospital. Abington, unlike many other community hospitals, provides a significant number of abortions and does so in cases that are more complicated, high-risk situations, a little later into pregnancy. So these abortions could not be easily dismissed and sent to a Planned Parenthood or some other women's health center. Those places are not able to do abortions under these circumstances. They need a hospital setting, and Abington has been a very important provider of those.
When you look at some of these other mergers, and I'm thinking about, you know, contraceptive care or fertility treatments, and this is not to talk necessarily about Abington and Holy Redeemer, but have you also seen that the secular hospitals stop doing those procedures or stop offering those services as well?
Absolutely. In many cases, the non-Catholic hospital is required as a condition of the deal to cease doing not only abortions, but also contraceptive counseling, providing of contraceptives, tubal ligations, vasectomies, all infertility services, no longer allowed to provide comprehensive HIV prevention counseling, which should include discussion of condoms, because condoms are not allowed under the Catholic directives. So there are many, many reproductive health services that are restricted by the rules that Catholic hospitals follow. And one of my concerns with this particular proposed joint venture is that abortion may be just the starting point, that some of these other services may become jeopardized the further Abington and Holy Redeemer get into a partnership. As well, I have a lot of concerns about what we've seen in other cases around the country, which is that abortion is interpreted much more broadly than you might think. And so we have seen cases in which women have been unable to get treatment for ectopic pregnancies. Women have not been able to have their miscarriages managed and handled properly at hospitals that have become merged with Catholic facilities. And in one case, we had a woman who had to be sent 80 miles away to the nearest hospital when she was suffering a miscarriage because the hospital was newly under Catholic directives and her physician was told, you cannot treat her as long as there still is a heartbeat in there. So there is a slippery slope. I heard your previous guest talk about this, and she's right to be concerned about that.
And that's Lois Utley. She's the director of the Merger Watch Project, the third of four guests in this hour of Radio Times. I do want to get some callers in on the conversation. We are talking about a discussion between Abington Memorial Hospital and Holy Redeemer Healthcare System in suburban Philadelphia, a discussion about the creation of a new regional healthcare system, raising a whole host of questions and concerns when a secular hospital and a faith-based hospital join together in some form of a partnership. 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Joan from Elkins Park to join us. And Joan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I live in the area. I'm a senior citizen, and I have physicians all on the staff of Abington Hospital whom I have notified that I will withdraw from their practices if that merger is signed. I will not participate in an institution that would deign to deny women their constitutional right to an abortion. I think this is an outrage, and we shall overcome.
And Joan, I'm curious, where are you going to go to get your medical services?
Well, there are other wonderful hospitals in our area and in our city. So there's always Einstein Northern. There's locally, there's Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, Jefferson Hospital, Bryn Mawr Hospital. That's where I will have to go. It will be a great inconvenience, and it will be sad because I have a relationship with many physicians on the staff of Abington Hospital. But I cannot abide this merger. It is a denial of rights, not only to women, but, you know, for senior citizens, the end of life issues.
Well, I appreciate.
Who can ever forget Terry Schiavo?
Schiavo,
and that,
yes.
Yes, right. Who can forget that? And the interference that the pressure that was brought on that husband. I can't deal with a place like that, and I know hundreds of people in this area who feel this way.
Well, Joan, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Lois Utley says in response. And Lois, even looking at some of these other mergers across the country, have patients fled as a result of these mergers?
Well, patients in many of these communities have done exactly what your caller has just done, which is to speak up and loudly voice their concerns about this. The fact that this reaction is occurring is actually the price that Abington Hospital is already paying just for dating Holy Redeemer Hospital. And it should be a sign that they have jeopardized the trust of the community that they rely on, the physicians who practice there, and also the many people who donate dollars or volunteer hours to Abington Hospital. You don't want to risk that because a hospital relies on the support of its donors, it relies on its physicians to bring patients there, and it relies on the willingness of the patients to go there. It's been our experience in working on, again, nearly 100 cases like this across the country that when the community is informed and engaged, and speaking up, and when the physicians are doing so, which is clearly the case with the Abington Hospital merger, it makes a difference. Sometimes the board of the hospital will say, hey, you know, this really is not such a good idea. We thought it was going to be a good thing for our hospital. We were well-intentioned, but we see that our community and our patients don't want us to go this way, and they change their mind.
Let me get Lydia from Abington to join us. Lydia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. My name's Lydia.
Hi, Lydia.
And I'm very strongly opposed to the merger. I believe that religious ideology has no place whatsoever in a secular hospital, and that a hospital should cover all procedures and all aspects of women's health care. They shouldn't be able to pick and choose what procedures are, you know, quote-unquote right and wrong. Abortions are a very medically necessary procedure, and to deny them just makes them less safe and makes conditions less safe for women. The need for abortions is always going to exist, and I think that pro-life and other ideologies, it's speaks to a deeper fear, a fear of women, and maybe they should examine that. And I'm worried that this will only be the beginning in what will ultimately be a loss of control for Abington over to a religious ideology.
Well, Lydia, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Lois, let me go back to you. And having read some of the information that you have at your website there, there are several, I guess, proposals that have been tried, a hospital within a hospital beside a hospital. Does that resolve some of the issues that we've been talking about?
It can, but it's not a perfect solution. In the case of Abington Hospital, the only, you know, potential I could see would be for a separate ambulatory surgery center to provide these abortions. However, that is far from an ideal proposal. First of all, it separates those women's health services from the rest of the services they would receive at Abington Hospital. It isolates the provision of abortion from the rest of hospital services. It can make the patients receiving abortions and the physicians performing them targets of anti-choice violence, and we've certainly seen plenty of that around the country. As well, you know, you really can't make a surgical center financially viable if all it is doing is providing abortion services. It's not enough revenue. So there are serious questions about the financial viability of such a center. It would require money to get it up and running. It would require some sort of endowment from Abington Hospital to make sure that it doesn't disappear a few years later. I really see it as quite an undesirable solution in this case.
About a minute and a half before we have to say goodbye to you, but something like 20% of hospitals in this country are religiously affiliated, but it seems to me that they are also serving a increasingly diverse patient population. What kind of challenge, then, to these religiously affiliated hospitals?
Well, religiously affiliated hospitals now employ and serve people of all faiths and also those who don't belong to a faith. I think Catholic hospitals are facing a real turning point here. Recently, Catholic Healthcare West, which is the big Catholic health system out in California and Arizona, decided that it was having so much trouble getting non-Catholic hospitals to merge with its hospitals that it stepped away from its affiliation with the Catholic Church so that it wouldn't be so bound up by having to follow all these Catholic directives and be under the supervision of the local bishop. There may be something like that that other Catholic hospitals will have to consider, because people at a hospital like Abington Hospital shouldn't be asked to change the way Abington Hospital is in order to partner with Holy Redeemer. It should be quite possible for Holy Redeemer to stay Holy Redeemer and Abington to stay Abington without having to have one party force the other to drop some of its services.
Well, Lois Utley, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Yes, thanks.
You're welcome. She's director of the Merger Watch Project. We'll be calling up John Haas after this very short break, president of the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And we'll be taking some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
This Week in This American Life, Jorge Salcedo was the security chief for the head of the Cali drug cartel, and he was secretly trying to bring them down, get everybody arrested. And then the gangsters realized that there's a snitch among them, and they began to suspect Jorge.
In the tape, they make a comment, well, he's acting funny. He's kind of nervous.
Hiding in plain sight this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, David Kirkpatrick, Cairo bureau chief for the New York Times, talks about the new president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and what his election means for the U.S., Israel, and the Palestinians. Kirkpatrick is a former Times Washington correspondent and covered the American conservative movement. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. How did 27 cities in Pennsylvania end up in dire financial straits? Also, the London Olympics had so few private security personnel they had to call in the army. So how secure is London going forward? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about a proposed merger partnership between Holy Redeemer Hospital and Abington Memorial Hospital in suburban Philadelphia. And the fourth of four guests joins us now. John Haas is president of the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And we do have a full bank of calls, but here's that phone number, which is 1-888-477-9499. I began by talking with one of the administrators from Abington about what Abington would get from a merger with Holy Redeemer. From your perspective, what does Holy Redeemer get?
Well, I think both institutions would achieve the same kind of mutual goods. I mean, they'd achieve significant advantages for the patient population in the area, where they're able to share technologies, greater shared access to medical information, better management of chronic diseases. If one hospital brings in robotics and there's no need to do it at the other hospital that's only 2 miles away. So there can be very, very significant savings and more efficient provision of health care in the area.
Is there a difference between a merger and a partnership?
Oh, yes. These were used almost as interchangeable terms. We usually say when you've seen one of these collaborative arrangements, you've seen one. We've dealt with an awful lot of them across the country, and they're very significantly different. I mean, a merger would result in basically one institution, and if a Catholic institution were involved in that, then it would have to follow the ethical and religious directives. Partnerships, from what I understand, is happening here with Abington Holy Redeemer. I can't speak directly to it.
Right.
But partnerships, you would have two remaining distinct corporations, institutions with their own ethos, their own culture, their own management teams. They're just cooperating, collaborating in areas that pose no ethical problems for either side. Along the terms that I just mentioned earlier in terms of a more efficient provision of health care in the area.
So under a partnership, I mean, literally then Abington could continue. And obviously we're talking about an end-of-life decisions, abortion, contraception. Under a partnership, as you understand it, Abington could continue to do what it does today. Holy Redeemer do what it does today, and they would share some services but have separate services that would be different?
In partnerships, yes, that can occur. And I think Jack Kelly said that at the beginning of your program.
What if someone then wanted to come to, and we're talking a little hypothetical here, obviously, because the decision has not been made, but even under a partnership, if I were a patient and I went, let's say, to Holy Redeemer, and I wanted contraceptive services, I would then get referred to Abington for those services?
Well, Holy Redeemer simply would say we don't provide contraception. That's its policy now, so nothing would change whatsoever with Holy Redeemer Hospital. And nothing would change with Abington either in a partnership. And again, that's what Jack Kelly said at the beginning of your program.
Well, but this question of abortion seems to be unresolved at this point. And it sounded from what Jack Kelly was saying, they were trying to figure out how to resolve that. But it seems like that is the sticking point. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. A couple of people in the program had said that's fundamentally a non-negotiable point with not just Catholics, but with many other people out there who are considered to be pro-life. So that would be a non-negotiable position on the question of the direct taking of innocent human life. Yeah, we wouldn't cooperate even in the attainment of the other goods if it were involving cooperating with somebody that we thought was doing something that was just grievously wrong and a violation of fundamental human rights.
So that would be, I mean, to use crass term, that would be a deal breaker?
Oh, yes. I think that's what's giving rise to the whole controversy. I think it's been clear that that would be a deal breaker.
when you look at a Catholic hospital system, then where do these directives come from? How are they interpreted? How are these hospitals run?
Well, these directives were drawn up really in the early 1900s. It first started with the American College of Physicians drawing up guidelines as to what would have to be met in order for a healthcare institution to be regarded as a hospital. And once that was established, then Catholic hospitals simply took those over as well. So there are ethical guidelines in any healthcare institution that are drawn up in some kind of protocols or directives. Catholic healthcare has had these from the beginning. The bishops, who have ultimate responsibility for the ministries within their jurisdiction, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops issues these directives. The last time they were revised was in 2009. And they're just fundamentally the do's and don'ts of what we consider to be the provision of moral health care. Like, for example, informed consent. I mean, if you line these up with the ethical directives of the American Medical Association, there'd be very little disparity between the two sets of directives.
But as you said, bishops are responsible for interpreting these directives within their diocese. But in practicality, have there been differing interpretations?
Well... You know, just as you can have varying medical opinions as to how to treat a given patient, there might be differing interpretations with regard to a particular directive. But I would say, by and large, no, they're generally understood and applied pretty much universally across the country.
Is it a challenge, though, for a Catholic hospital, a religiously affiliated hospital, but Catholic, because that's what we're talking about, when you have non-Catholic staff, you have non-Catholic patients, does that provide a kind of a challenge for that institution? Then we'll get to our callers.
Well, anybody that would join in the ministry of a Catholic hospital would have to share in the vision of healthcare being provided by that institution, whether they were Catholic or not. So, you know, there's no requirement that people adhere to any particular doctrinal position of the Catholic Church. They want to be able to provide moral, sound healthcare to those that come to them for help. You know, there's a lot of misinformation, though, as to what can or cannot be done in Catholic institutions, and I was hearing some of that previously in your program.
Correct. I mean, what did you hear that you disagreed with?
Well, for example, the suggestion that we can't deal with ectopic pregnancies. These are pregnancies that take place outside the uterus, for example, in the fallopian tube. And these can be dealt with within Catholic institutions. There's the story of the woman who was experiencing a miscarriage, and the hospital said they couldn't do it because they detected a fetal heartbeat, and so she was sent to another institution 80 miles away. That wouldn't be done in a Catholic hospital. You can have people in the local hospital misinterpreting these directives themselves. My understanding in that particular case was this was a hospital that had recently joined a Catholic system, and they thought that they couldn't complete the delivery once it had started, but they certainly could have, according to Catholic moral teaching.
But it sounds like there wasn't a training or education program so that people understood what these directives were.
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, I can't judge what occurred in that particular institution, but you're absolutely right.
I keep going back to abortion, but for all the obvious reasons, but if the life of a mother were at risk in a Catholic hospital, can a woman get an abortion?
Well, can I read from the directives?
As long as it's not too complicated
no,
or too
it's not.
Long.
I think it's very straightforward.
Okay.
It says, operations, treatments, and medications that have as their direct purpose the cure of a proportionately serious pathological condition of a pregnant woman are permitted when they cannot be safely postponed until the unborn child is viable, even if they will result in the death of the unborn child. Now, that's in the ethical religious directives of Catholic healthcare services. There are many situations in which an intervention would be entirely legitimate to address a pathology that the woman is suffering, the pregnant woman is suffering, that might result in the death of the child. A pregnant woman could have a cancerous uterus in a Catholic institution. That uterus could be removed, and the cancer could be removed. If a woman, Lois Utley, had said earlier that treatment was denied for a woman who had begun to have infected membranes mm-hmm. after a premature rupture, that's permitted in a Catholic institution. It's perfectly legitimate to evacuate the uterus to remove the pathology. So there just has to be a better understanding of what Catholic moral teaching really is on these issues.
Let me get, looks like Elenia from Washington, D.C. to join us on Radio Times. Elenia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I guess this comes back to really a fundamental issue for me. As a secular woman, why am I essentially being forced to practice as a Catholic within a Catholic institution? If I'm showing up to an emergency room with a critical condition, which might be on the in the gray area of what you do and do not approve, why am I essentially being told what I can and cannot do, especially in a situation where I may not have time to be sent to Abington or another hospital? Also want to give a shout-out to the residents who have risked their jobs to speak out against this. Thank you.
You're welcome, Elenia. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. And John Haas, you want to respond to her question?
She would be cared for if she came to a hospital in a critical condition. She would be cared for in the emergency room and taken care of. There's something called EMTALA. Has that come up yet on your program?
No, not yet. Go ahead.
It refers to as the emergency, treatment and active labor act. Okay, that says that a woman must have her condition stabilized in an emergency room, any emergency room, and she cannot be turned away. And that's respected in Catholic institutions as well.
So are there any differences then between how Catholic institutions and how secular institutions, and by that I mean hospitals, how they operate and what they can and can't do?
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, we will not perform direct abortions in a Catholic hospital. We will not perform surgical sterilizations in Catholic hospitals. But when you're talking about the sort of partnership that seems to be emerging here between Holy Redeemer and Abington, it sounds like Abington will be able to continue those procedures in the relationship, the collaborative effort, the partnership with Holy Redeemer.
Let me get Todd from Glenside to join us on Radio Times. Todd, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm a former member of the Abington Hospital medical staff, and like many of the doctors there, I'm concerned about the growing erosion of access to reproductive health, both nationally and regionally. And then two quick comments.
Sure.
One is, I work with many medical staffs now as a consultant around the country that have merged, and I often see the discomfort of the doctors go on for years. It's not just a transient concern. In some cases, one hospital I worked with in New Hampshire, the merger had to be undone after 5 years because of ongoing discomfort of the doctors on the medical staff. And my second comment is with regard to concerns that have been expressed about a slippery slope. I want to point out that, at least according to newspaper articles, the chair of Holy Redeemer, who is William Sasso, who is the counsel for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, will potentially become the chairman of the board for several years of the combined entity. He's been a very outspoken advocate for Catholic prerogatives. He called the 2005 grand jury report that revealed some of the child abuse concerns in the Archdiocese anti-Catholic. And so I think despite the assurances that Abington's going to be able to somehow box up the concerns with regard to Catholic imperatives, I think there are good reasons to be worried.
Well, Todd, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We'll take two of your points. One is about, and there are concerns, John Haas, about a board and what their responsibilities would be and who would serve on this board.
Well, of course, once a contractual arrangement has been entered into by the two institutions, they have to abide by the terms of the contractual arrangements, and that means also the board. The board can't violate them. The chairman of the board, whether he be Catholic or secular, cannot overreach the terms of the agreement that were entered into. So I think it was Lois Utley said, you know, they're going through a courtship now, a dating period, mm-hmm. and they'll see what the terms of the relationship will be. Once you enter into that, then it's the responsibility of the board to make sure that those terms are adhered to. It seems that most of the concern seems to be about slippery slopes than what the actual situation is.
Well, the other thing Todd mentioned, and as a, he described himself as a consultant on some of these mergers, is seeing that this marriage, to use the metaphor, certainly in some instances, has not worked out. Fair enough?
Fair enough. I mean, some marriages don't work out either.
But it seems that we're also, though, talking about, patients' health, patients' lives in some certain case. Do you think some of these mergers happen too quickly, that they don't go through this dating courtship process to think out all the permutations?
Yes, I would think that probably has happened. I'm sure it's not going to happen in this case. They have a long period of due diligence. There are many voices being raised, and I'm sure they're going to be listened to.
And do you think it'll happen?
I don't know. I can't really speak to this case. I can only talk about how the Catholic Church approaches these kinds of collaborative relationships, what our positions are in certain mm-hmm. clinical issues. But I can't really speak to the Holy Redeemer Abington proposed collaboration.
We began, and we're almost out of time here. John Kelly was talking about the fact that there are some financial considerations. Is that also true for Catholic hospitals, John?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, tens of millions of dollars can be saved by cooperating on a host of deliveries within healthcare. As I mentioned, if one hospital is bringing in robotics, why would the next hospital 2 miles down the road do so? As you say, tens of millions of dollars can be provided. That's going to help the overall healthcare delivery picture in our country, and it's going to make for a more efficient provision of healthcare to the population.
Well, John Haas, thank you for calling us, or joining us, I should say. Thank you for letting
Sherry,
us call
you.
And he's president of the National Catholic Bioethics Center, located here in Philadelphia, the fourth of four guests in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. Bob Ball's the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder, and Jonathan Best helping us out today. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.